Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and good morning, distinguished delegates. I will be co-presenting with my colleague, George Georgiadis, who I had the honor to work closely with on this topic over this biennium, and will be presenting on emerging challenges and trends for industrial safety and decarbonization agendas. So for a brief overview of our presentation, we'll start with background information and then review some industrial safety challenges and trends. Then we'll look at some recent energy transition-related industrial accidents, the role of the convention and the energy transition, and then the survey which was conducted under the Bureau this biennium, including key findings and conclusions. So as you know, and as we have heard recently at COP29, our climate is at a breaking point, with estimates showing we're heading to 3-degree temperature rise, which could lead to spiraling disasters. So to achieve the goals under the Paris Agreement, rapid decarbonization is needed. And we're seeing many ambitious commitments emerging from governments, cities, organizations, and beyond. And as such, energy transition projects are underway and increasing. These commonly involve renewable energy, battery storage technology, hydrogen and ammonia, large-scale battery energy storage systems, carbon capture storage, as well as decarbonizing high-emitting industrial facilities. So we have identified a number of emerging industrial safety challenges and trends. I'll briefly go over 5 of these. So number 1, the large-scale production, storage, use, and distribution of hazardous substances and technologies for the transition are expected to create additional risks, with new technologies also bringing unknown hazards and risks. So more awareness raising and safety measures are needed. Number 2, renewable energy and battery technology require critical minerals such as lithium, nickel, cobalt, and more. Now, estimates show that the demands for these will drastically increase in the coming decades. Basically, it's very important to address the risks and hazards of critical minerals throughout their life cycles, from mining to processing to tailings to technology production plants, and also to waste and recycling. And we see the landscape changing with many new strategies and laws, such as the EU Critical Raw Materials Act, which aims to bring to make the EU more self-reliant on mining, processing, and recycling such materials. Number 3, there are other processes underway to curb emissions, such as carbon capture and storage, and decarbonizing industrial facilities. These also can pose significant risks to people and the environment if not safely managed. And as countries have different trajectories and priorities for decarbonization and are using different technologies, they each will have different sets of risks to address and different innovations and knowledge to share. So this is where international cooperation is really key for enhancing safety and these exchanges across countries. And number 5, the rate of the energy transition, it's happening very fast in many countries, not to mention how much faster it needs to accelerate to meet the Paris Agreement goals. So this requires major safety considerations, knowledge, and tools to support authorities which are under increasing pressure to quickly permit energy projects. On this slide, you'll find some recent industrial accidents which involved energy transition related substances or technologies. So just last month in Missouri in the United States of America, there was an explosion and fire at a critical mineral recovery lithium battery recycling plant. Last year, there was an explosion of oxygen tanks and a fire at a nickel plant in Indonesia where 18 people died and many workers were injured. Also, there were recent fires at several battery energy storage facilities, including in France and Sweden. So what is the role of the Industrial Accidents Convention in the energy transition? Now, the underlying purpose of the convention, of course, remains the same. So that's to protect people and the environment in the interest of present and future generations against the effects of industrial accidents. Past accidents involving energy transition-related substances and technologies, as well as the exponentially increasing production and deployment of those, demonstrate that the environmental, health-related, and industrial risks must be urgently addressed to prevent and mitigate harm and pollution during this pivotal era of decarbonization. So how does the convention support this? The substantive provisions of the convention apply, of course, to industrial accidents, which are defined as events resulting from uncontrolled developments in the course of an activity involving hazardous substances. So this, of course, includes energy transition-related activities. Also, industrial accidents capable of causing transboundary effects, So an accident, such an accident, which could have effects in the jurisdiction of another party. And finally, to hazardous activities, which are activities that must have a substance that meets an Annex I threshold. So this, for the energy transition, this can include examples of hydrogen, methanol, or nickel compounds. And they must be capable of causing transboundary effects. Now, the three pillars of the convention, prevention, preparedness, and response, each contain safety measures that respectively apply to one or more of these. And as you know, these range from preventive measures to minimizing risks in decision-making on siting, to contingency planning, to informing the public, and to transboundary cooperation. Furthermore, past work and lessons learned under the convention provide leverage for addressing emerging risks of the energy transition. So a few examples are the comprehensive guidance and tools that have been developed on mine tailing safety. These have a strong relevance and can be built on to ensure safety in the life cycle of critical minerals. Risk assessment, of course, is essential for all types of substances and technologies. And the publication that we'll be launching this week has case studies on ammonia refrigeration and LNG facilities, for example. Also, there's guidance on good practices on siting and land use planning, which can be built on and tailored to the energy transition. And beyond these standards, the convention also serves as a hub for multilateralism and international cooperation. So we've developed excellent partnerships with the UNECE Sustainable Energy Division, OECD, the Joint Research Center, and more, all of which have complementary work streams. And also, events under the convention really bring together the key actors, such as national authorities, inspectors, scholars, industry, and civil society, to enable knowledge generation and policy formulation and developing technical matters and capacity building. So with that, I will give the floor to George, my co-presenter, to discuss the survey.